you guys. I need two Romeo India whiskey. My name is Dick. The repeater tonight has a slightly low audio on some of the input, but I think we'll be able to get by. Technical Net is a gathering of curious radio amateurs who come together to share what they've learned about radio and wireless equipment. So we help each other figure out how these things work, how to make them work better, how to understand antennas, transmission lines, transmitters, and receivers, and propagation, and the 27 different kinds of ham radio. TechNet's been around since 1982, 36 years. I never expected it to last this long. There's always new guys joining. There's always new kinds of ham radio being invented, particularly digital techniques, for instance. Let me drop. Yeah, normally my voice is louder than the beep. The beep is louder than me tonight. Okay, so TechNet is broken up into roughly three sections, not necessarily equal. We go with the flow. Two of those sections can become longer if there's more enthusiasm for people asking questions and getting answers in those sections. The first section, people sign in because they do have a question or a comment for the net. And they give me their call letters, their name, and the word yes, meaning you do have a question or a comment. You need not sign in to say you're listening. After 36 years, we believe somebody is listening. That doesn't have to be proven anymore. And try to leave enough space to make sure you get the full beeps, because we want the whole system to be reset, the IRLP and the echo link, because people do check in from the outer areas. Can we drop? The second section, if we didn't reverse things, is normally Dr. Roy, AC2GS, who runs the science talk section. And he's got quite a list of subjects he thinks we should be discussing. Occasionally we might reverse the order between him and the third section, which is called WS2N, with the space report. And an exciting event did happen with the Soviet launch and abortment of the launch from the Soviet Union this week. Okay, at this time I'm going to take check-in, so if you do have a question or a comment, please give me your call letters and your name right now, and do remember to wait for the four beeps. K2RIW listening.
M2EO.
Rich recognized. Anyone else? We're looking for check-ins on the for the TechNet. I guess a fair number of people are away because of the NearFest up in New Hampshire. So that may make the attendance a little bit light tonight. And don't worry about having a question you think is not technical enough. Or you're afraid you've got a question that might be judged as a dumb question. There is, on the technical net, there is no such thing as a dumb question. We don't treat simplistic questions that way. It quite often represents something the person really wants to know. So, if we have any other check-ins with a question or a comment, please give me a call letters and name right now.
WD2GXM with a dumb question. Rich, and yes.
Okay. Glad you've got a question. Perfectly right to have a dumb question, Rich. Mr. GXM. Okay. Make sure I can read my own writing. Okay. Another call. Anyone else have even a dumb question? A simplistic question? A puzzle question? Whatever. Anyone else wants to check in? Give me your call letters and name right now. K2RIW listening.
K3LTC, Nate in Yapak, no questions, just listening.
Very fine, Nate. Nate with a no. And one last call. Anyone to check into the TechNet with a question or a comment? Please give me a call letters and name right now.
KD2PWQ. King David 2, Papa Whiskey Queen. The name is Jordan from Melville, and we are listening.
KF1, SHY.
Okay, I heard an AF1, extremely weak signal. 80% noise, 20% audio. And, so unless something changes, we're not going to be able to copy you, sir. Or at least not very well. Okay, we're going to go over to Rich, N2EO. What's the latest with you, Rich? K2RIW on the TechNet.
Oh,
Jack Jack Julio. You know, the address says Alan. And you said something about the formability. What happens to the formability on that valley? Go up, go down, and all is about doing formulas on what is formability.
Yeah, what you're referring to, Rich, is called permeability. How well a magnetic field permeates the material. And when you get a failure, permeability goes down. It never goes up. Permeability is how well a magnetic field travels through your material compared to iron or compared to air. Air has a certain degree of permeability, so to speak. In other words, if I wrap a certain number of turns of wire in air, a certain number of turns of wire, and I measure the inductance, I'm going to get a certain number in maybe microhenry, if that's the units you're using. If I then put a material inside of that coil of wire, which has permeability, and if the material had a permeability of 5, whoever number of microhenries I measured when the coil was being used in air, with a new material inside of the coil, I will get 5 times as many microhenries. That's what permeability means. The magnetic field travels through the permeable material, in my example, 5 times better than it does in air, obvious by the fact that your inductance goes up 5 to 1 when you put in the material. And if that material was a slug on a coil with a screw thread where you could slowly insert the material, I then would have a variable inductor. Let me drop this. In my example, as you turn the slug, as you turn the screw thread, and the slug is slowly inserted into the coil, I could make the number of microhenries. It might start off as 10 microhenries, and it'll slowly slide up to 50 microhenries, 5 to 1. If my material has a permeability of 5, when it is inserted in that coil. I've done something here a little bit overly simplistic. Let me drop. I might have a material that has a permeability of 5. And if that material is inserted into the coil such that it makes a complete magnetic loop, then I would get a 5 to 1 increase. If I had a permeability of material of 5, and it's only a slug, and therefore the magnetic field is flowing through my slug during part of its path, and part of the path it exits one end of the slug, goes around in air, and comes back into the other end. So if I didn't have a complete magnetic loop of the material, even though the material had a permeability of 5, I wouldn't get as much as a 5 to 1 increase. Maybe I'd only get a 2 or 3 to 1 increase. So shape matters. How big and the shape matters. So there's a number of variables there. Let me drop. The nice thing about air for an air core coil is that air has essentially no frequency response and no saturation characteristics. Air never saturates. Air never runs out of frequency. Depending on how finely grained and how thin are the individual layers of a tape-wound toroid, for instance, the physical layout of your permeable material will almost always give it an upper frequency response where it no longer functions anywhere near as well because of eddy currents above some frequency. And second of all, almost all materials that have any kind of permeability do have a saturation characteristic. As you put more and more current through the coil, and the magnetic field in your material gets stronger and stronger, eventually it hits saturation where the magnetic field can't go any louder, can't go any stronger. In which case, with saturation, your inductance goes down by a complicated process. So that's a little bit about permeable materials. Let me drop. The material that was in your Allen device was the kind of material that can be overheated and can be saturated and can be damaged. By overheating, what we what we guess, and I think Roy mentioned that with one of his talks on his research on permeable materials that he used in toroids, is that your individual iron filings are probably coated with something like iron oxide, which is an insulator, and also in some kind of a matrix like a glue, which keeps the particles apart. And when you overheat that material, some of those properties get damaged, and the individual flakes of the iron filing, so to speak, start touching each other, start making eddy currents, and that's one of the modes of failure we speculate as to what happens with material that has been overheated. And you get a failure where the permeability goes down, the coil no longer behaves anywhere near as well as it should, and your coupling between the transmitter and your antenna degrades from a lack of coupling, saturation, and so on, when you damage the material. Let me drop. Now, it turns out the manufacturer of your balun did improve the design. He made a later design change, and you bought one from a vendor which had a good price, and we have reason to believe you bought the exact same old one all over again, which isn't necessarily bad. Let me show you what's going on here, Rich. A couple of weeks ago, you sort of promised us that the next time you turned on your equipment, you would not fire the high-power amplifier into the balun and antenna first. You would put only the exciter in there first, and you would cut it back to something like 10 watts. You are going to first make a measurement of 10 watts going forward, how many watts is coming back. If 9.5 watts is coming back, which is a bad condition, don't go any further. Don't go the next step of higher power or the amplifier, because you're going to create damage. And we believe by some pilot error, you did do that. You didn't follow the promise of lighting up on low power first. Let me drop. When you get a high reflectivity from a load, antenna, bad dummy load, short circuit in the cable, whatever, when you get a lot of reflective power, the amount of power reflected, the percentage of the power reflected, you plug it into a formula, and we call it standing wave ratio, or we call it reflection coefficient. That's one factor. Depending on the length of the transmission line, between that short and, say, your balun, or the short and the amplifier, depending on the length, that highly reflective power creating standing wave ratio makes a very characteristic pattern on the transmission line. Let me drop. Standing wave ratio really comes about because in the old days, the only way you could measure the reflection coefficient is by an indirect measurement. You had something like a slotted line or ledger wire. You had some kind of a detecting device, and you were able to slide it along a slot in the transmission line if it was coax, or slide it along the open wire line if it was a pair of ledger wires. And standing wave ratio means that at certain points you see a high voltage, and other points you see a low voltage. The high voltage points are half wavelength apart. Those are the places where the forward going signal and the reflected signal are in phase. You get a high voltage. The places where you get a low voltage is where a little bit further down range, quarter wavelength down range, the forward going signal and the reverse going signal are out of phase. However, out of phase gives you a low voltage, but a high current. So when you get a high standing wave ratio along a transmission line, it's a little bit like beads on a string. Let me drop. You get alternate points of high voltage and alternate points of high current in between each other. If the high current falls at a point that where the transmission line has got some resistance, you're going to get some extra heating there. If the high current falls at a point in your transmission line where the center conductor is very close to the outer conductor, you might get an arc over. So where you get the damage in the transmission line, heating and arc over and so on, is a function of not only how high is the standing wave ratio, but how far away is the device that's making the standing wave ratio. I can speculate that the first time you had damage with the toroid, with the balun, Quite possibly the high current point was right at the balun, and it created extra heating and damaged that balun. Hopefully the new balun has not been damaged, because whatever change occurred, rewiring or whatever, was a change in frequency. By the way, when you change the frequency, that pattern along the transmission line moves to a different spot, because all of those are separated by a half wave, but the length of the half wave changes when you change frequency. Let me drop. So if you were lucky, the high current point on the transmission line didn't fall in the middle of the balun on the second test, and hopefully the second balun has not been damaged. But you've got to make sure, Rich, when you, until we make sure that your antenna is working well, your balun is working well, your transmission line is working well, until the whole radiating system is working well, please do not hit it with more than 10 watts of power. Make sure the 10 watts going forward is very little power coming back before you go to higher power. Otherwise, you could do damage. The good news is that your high power amplifier with tubes, it can tolerate a lot of reflective power. But the antenna tuner cannot, the balun cannot, and for all we know, maybe even the antenna can be damaged by high power when it's got a high standing wave ratio. So for a whole bunch of reasons, you should test it on low power first, and until you pass that test, don't go to higher power, because higher power, key down in some time, is going to heat things up, arc things over, and do damage. And that creates a whole lot of work for Andy, and he's got to keep fixing the things that get damaged by these events. N2EO, with probably some further questions on all of the above. K2RIW, go ahead, Rich.
Aspect N2EO. I feel very, very stupid doing that. Any centimeter design change, the same company that made my tuner on the balun, Power Star, says, I understand they have the capacity.
KC2GS?
Roy recognized, yeah, the new Power Star, the newer design, we believe it's got a thicker toroid. Maybe two toroids, and maybe the capacitor. AC2GS, go right ahead, Roy. K2IW in the TechNet.
And by the way, how is my signal level? Because I don't want to give anyone a headache here.
Okay. My audio is a little bit lower than normal. Your audio is a bit lower than normal. Only by a few dB. You sound good, so please proceed as is. You got it, Roy.
Okay, thank you very much, Dick. The old balun design was two toroids or a pig nose of ferrite. I haven't quite figured that out because I've heard both descriptions. The new one is supposedly four toroids and some capacitors on top of it. He got another copy of the old Valstar. The important, slightly new information, though, from the guy who designed his antenna is that guy doesn't recommend the Palstar balun. He recommends a balun design balun that's 4-to-1 that he sells on his site. And also, he suggests that people do not shorten the twin line that's running down from the antenna, that it's a specific length for a specific reason. So take that as you will.
Yeah, because the transmission line is multiple wavelengths long, I'm having great difficulty believing that the length of the transmission line is a tuned line which makes it work well on certain bands. I am guessing that the length of the line is such that when you use his recommended balun, either the high voltage point or the high current point falls at the balun, whichever is the most desirable one, when you don't change the length of the lot, when you're at the frequency where the antenna maybe has a high standing wave ratio. So that's a guess on my part. So you're saying the later Palstar design has got four toroids and wow. So they've done quite a bit of work on that. By having four toroids, it's much less likely to be overheated, and because the heat is being shared, so to speak, on top of that, there's lots less saturation characteristic. It's the saturation characteristics, I am guessing, of a high standing wave ratio that creates the extra heating, that creates the damage. And by the way, you're hearing periodically a raspy noise in the background. The repeater's doing that tonight. Let's see if I change my power, if it changes the way it does it. Yeah, I'm not sure. So, there's something making interference out there. So, I think you said that Ballon Design is the one that he recommends, and is that the same guy that actually designed the antenna? I've forgotten the brand name of the antenna. AC2GS for further information. K2RIW, good, Roy.
Yeah, Dick, he's the guy who sells the Cobra Ultralight, and he designed the Cobra Ultralight. He has a special branded version of Ballon Design that he sells for a reasonable price that he has on the label, apparently specifically for this type of antenna. What's different than Ballon Design's usual 4-to-1, I don't know, and the guy's trying to make a couple extra bucks, I'm not quite sure. But it's a third-party Ballon Design made Ballon that he recommends for all of his antennas.
The Ballon that he recommends, Roy, do we know anything about it? How many toroids? Does it have capacitors? Is it bigger or smaller? And so on. Is it more expensive? Does it have a history of not creating failure when the antenna presents a high standing wave ratio and you're hitting it with a kilowatt? And by the way, is the Cobra antenna rated for a kilowatt? There, I'm not sure. AC2GS, K2RIW, good, Roy.
A while ago, I looked up the page and I read all the stuff, but unfortunately, I don't have the greatest memory as far as it goes. I believe it tolerates easily a kilowatt. It's a relatively simple design. It's a laterally loaded dipole. I don't have any specifics on the Ballon Design, but you can probably go to the website and find out. I can tell you the price, though, because that was the last thing that I looked at. The guy from Cobra is selling it for something like $85, which is, I think, competitive with the price that he got for his Palstar. And apparently, when this guy heard that a Palstar Ballon was involved, he did one of those hiss things. So I don't know if he's heard previous stories or what, but he certainly recommends the Ballon Design over a Palstar for his antennas, at least.
Okay, thank you. Good information. Someone just checked in saying he had some Ballon information. Wait for the four beeps. Give us your full set of call letters, your name, and then your information, sir. K2RIW on the TechNet. My name is Dick.
K2UPS, I had a comment, Dick, on the Ballon.
Go right ahead, K2UPS.
Good evening, Dick. I can't comment on the high-power Ballon Design products, but I have about four or five that are rated for 100 watts or less that I use, 1-to-1, 4-to-1, 9-to-1. I've never had any kind of issue with them. It's a very quality build, and the guy who owns the company, his name escapes me at the moment, but he's easily reachable through email, and he's very good at responding to questions that you might have. But I haven't heard anybody say anything bad about a Ballon Design Ballon.
Out of curiosity, Rich, where are you located tonight? I'm pretty sure you're mobile. You're probably in a vehicle that's 80 feet long. And I'm going to guess you might be in Pennsylvania, heading east. K2UPS, Uncle United Postal Service. K2RIW, that'd be good.
Okay, I'm in West Virginia at the moment, almost ready to cross into PA. But I'm climbing a big hill here, and I got stuck behind a truck that must have one squirrel for a motor, because we're doing 15 miles an hour, and there's no way I can pass this guy, because I can't build up the horsepower now, so it's going to be a long trek to the top of this one.
Yeah, I guess if a guy has a heavy load and or an underpowered tractor, he has to go to low gear, which means at full RPM, he's only moving 15 miles an hour. Is that approximately what's happening? Either that or there's a certain number of RPM he doesn't want to go beyond. Over to you, Rich.
K2UPS Mobile. I don't know what his problem is, but
He's only got one trailer. I got two, and I was actually able to go over into the middle and pass him, but he's either got motor issues or something. Something's not right, but I don't see any smoke coming out, so he'll figure it out, I'm sure.
Okay, thank you, Rich. So, there's a lot more to balance than first meets the eye. Current balance, voltage balance, 1-to-1, 2-to-1, 3-to-1, 4-to-1, 6-to-1, 8-to-1, I think it's a 9-to-1, impedance ratio between the input and the output side. So, balance quite often do good things, particularly if your particular antenna has an open wire feed line, like this Cobra antenna that Rich is using does have, and a nice way of going from the coax output of your transmitter to the balance, two wires side by side, so to speak, of the transmission line. The balance in between can simultaneously give you the unbalanced to balance. That's what balance stands for, balance to unbalance. It does that correction, as well as doing an impedance correction. And in some cases, to even do some frequency tuning for you. So, I guess the next step is that Andy, when he comes back from being up north, I think Andy is at the Nearfest in New Hampshire. I think he's on the way home right now, I'm guessing. He's going to be finishing up the repair of the directional coupler, the printed circuit board that was dialing the directional coupler on your antenna tuner. That got burned up. Let me drop. Remember, as I was saying before, depending on what frequency you're on and how many feet of cable there is between the short and the thing that you're analyzing, if the antenna was presenting a high standing wave ratio as if it was a short circuit, for instance, and if that high current point happened to fall on the printed circuit board that was on the output stage of your antenna tuner, and therefore the printed circuit board experienced excess heating, and Andy did tell us that the directional coupler printed circuit board is all charred from high current, from the high heating, and high current is quite possibly the reason. So you let the smoke out, Rich, and that's not good. Until you confirm that the things are working well, you shouldn't run key down for more than a couple of seconds, but you should always start off with low power first, because low power usually is safe. And if you don't get the right results on the low power, please don't proceed to the high power, because it keeps doing damage. N2EL for any further questions or comments. K2RIW in the TechNet.
I was listening to W8CDL. Let me just make a comment. I bet I got to go back to sleep.
Yeah, take your time, Andy. We got plenty of time for you. And how long ago did you come back? And I guess it's a pretty long drive, but you had good weather.
Okay, I have to go to work tomorrow, so it's out on the rest of the week, and I'm getting ready to go to work, listening in the background. Gotta get up really early, but let me just let you hear it from the horse's mouth. Number one, the antenna tuner is fixed. I already repaired it. I got the parts pretty quick, put it in. The price was reasonable. Replaced the whole directional coupler board with a new one, brand new. Tested it. Everything is fine. Antenna tuner is back to normal. It's working fine. I checked it out. That's done. I'm planning on seeing Rich next week. I spoke to Rich on the phone today because he called me. I told him I'm going to be there next week to give me antenna tuner back. But one thing I do want to do, which I did not do yet, is I want to compare the two balance that I have here with me. The new one, which he just got, and the bad one, which I already tested. I want to make an A-B comparison and see what the difference is. They are identical in size. I should say inside. Inside the balance, they are identical. So there is a new design, but apparently he's got an older design that he bought. The case is a little bit different, but the inside is the same. Except there's one extra capacitor that's now added across the output, the balance terminals. Let me let it drop a second. Okay, now, not having the schematic, it looks like a capacitor, but it might be a surge protector. I'm not sure. I got to look at it with a also a little magnifying glass because the writing is so small I can't see it with the naked eye. So I'm going to have to look at that to see what it is. That's the only difference. It uses what I call a binocular type, as I described earlier in the previous conversation, ferrite core, looking identical to the one that went bad. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to make a test, and I want to see how this one behaves compared to the other one. Okay, makes sense? Back to you, Dick, for a comment on that, then I'll continue. I have one more thing to say.
Yes, it all makes sense, Andy. And you said you did measure the first one, and you measured the fault. I'm wondering what fault you measured. Over to you, Andy.
Did I say fault? You're talking about the original one when I tested it, is that right?
Yes, I think you said it tested bad. What kind of a test did you run to confirm that it was defective, if you did? Over to you, Andy.
Well, the original test is what I described when I was at Rich's house and I placed my bird watt meter on the input of the balun, connecting, or I should say have it connected to his antenna. And when I saw a full reflected tower, I stopped right there, and then that's when I took the balun home. As Richie knows, I removed the balun and took it with me. Then I made the test on the bench with a 200 ohm non-inductive resistor, and I saw the same result. That's the test that told me there's something failing, or something has failed, because I should not see full reflected power. I was seeing 100 watts forward, this is from my transmitter, and about 90 watts coming back on my workbench, the original balun. Okay, I'm going to continue from there. Let me just let it drop if you want to make a comment. Okay, the second time I went to Rich's house, and it gets a little bit convoluted because I've been there so many times now, I forget how many times I was there. After I repaired the antenna tuner the first time, he then received the, I'm actually forgetting the sequence of events, but the bottom line is, I did check the new balun at Rich's house when I went there, because I brought with me my 200 ohm load resistor. And I did bring with me my watt meter, although his antenna tuner was not working because it was already damaged for the second time. Thinking back, I may be a little bit off on that, but I'm going by memory. Anyway, putting my bird watt meter into the balun, the new balun going into a 200 ohm load, I saw maybe 1 watt or 2 watts reflected power. In other words, one or two watts coming back. That was it, which told me, oh, now this balun is working. This is not doing what the other one is doing. So I then convinced Richard to, since I had to repair the tuner a second time, as I just mentioned, I convinced Richard to give me the new balun because I want to make an AB comparison on the bench, which I have yet to do. I'm going to do that this week. Because I want to prove to myself that something did go wrong with the original balun, since I have both with me, before I give everything back to Richard. Under the stipulation that do not use the amplifier.
Repeater, timeout.
Let me let it drop, because I heard the message. So when I go back there, the amplifier off, and going into the antenna, instead of my 200 ohm load, because I'm going to be checking that, I have yet to check it with a good balun. That's the thing. I haven't checked it with the good balun because the antenna tuner was already damaged. But now the antenna tuner is fixed. So with the proper antenna tuner fixed and a new balun, I'm going to recheck everything when I go back there. Let's see what happens next. Okay? Make sense? Back to you.
Yes, it does. So with the new balun, probably on 20 meters, you saw 1 or 2 watts coming back. You didn't say, but I'm going to assume that either 10 or 100 watts was going forward. And that was with the 200 ohm dummy load. and you didn't try it with the antenna at that time. So how many watts was going forward when you saw 102 watts coming back on the so-called new balun? Over to you, Andy.
At Richard's house, just about 100 watts. Because the SWR was low enough, the power of his radio was not cutting back. He does have SWR protection, which I did prove. So, since the SWR at that point was low, I did see just about 100 watts. I put the power up to max. I see 100 watts forward. I see maybe 2 or 3 watts coming back into my 200 ohm load.
Yeah, that's a very good test. And we'll eventually find out now, is there something funny going on with the antenna? Quite possibly there is. Nearfest, did you have good weather? Was it well attended? Did you sell things? Did you buy things? Give us a couple of words on Nearfest that you just came back. And my guess is that's, a 6-hour trip to get there and come back, Andy? Maybe 83 CDL, K2IW.
Okay. Yeah, I got back yesterday. And today was a sort of a catch-up day of things to do and napping part of the time. It was, a little bit tiring to get up there. It took 5 hours to get back. It took longer to get up there because of the rain. But here's the next thing I want to just mention. As Roy mentioned, because I did speak to Roy today about, and Roy, I sent you a picture, because I remembered I did take a picture of this other balun. And what I'm referring to, Vic, I did get a chance to walk around. I set up my testing table there for the first time. So I had a free radio checkout. If anybody buys something, they can bring it to me, and I'll check it out free of charge. And they welcomed me with open arms. And I did have 2 customers yesterday, and I didn't have any the first day, but, you know, I have yet to get to be known. It takes a little while, of course, so they know that I'm there and I'm going to be there. Hopefully I'll be back. When I did get a chance to walk around, just by coincidence, I happened to have bumped into the guy who apparently owns the company that makes this antenna, the Cobra Ultralight, because there was a sign on his table outside that says Cobra Ultralight antennas sold here. So of course it rang a bell in my head, and I said, okay, let me speak to this guy and let me find out what he says about what I've been finding out. So let me just continue that story of what he told me, basically what Roy said before. So let me just let it drop. I explained to him the situation that I found with the balun, and even though he kept on interrupting me, this guy telling me that I'm not setting it up right, that I'm not testing it right, and this and that, and I had to sort of calm him down to explain to him that it's not mine, it's someone else's, and I'm doing a repair job. Anyway, he told me that he does not recommend, as Roy mentioned, he does not recommend the PALSTAR balun with this particular antenna, but another company, as you know, named Balun Designs, who was actually, it was modeled after a Jevy Sivic, W2FMI, who wrote a book on balans and other ferrite transformers. He recommended that balun and actually showed me, he says, go over to the table and you'll see a balun on the table made by Balun Designs, and look at the writing on the bottom. It says, manufactured specifically for the Cobra Ultralight antenna. It's designed to be used for this antenna. He very adamant about it. He kept on saying, don't use PALSTAR. For whatever reason, I didn't go into a deep discussion with it because I could not stay there too long because my table was unoccupied and I needed to go back to my own table. So I couldn't stay there long to really get into the technicalities that I wanted to. But again, he does not recommend the PALSTAR and does recommend the Balun Designs. Price is about the same. He said, He said the only difference between the two, or one of the, I should say, one of the differences.
Repeater, time out.
Let me get the beep back. The main difference between the two is the ferrite core itself. Ballon Designs uses a toroidal core, a toroid core, which is a round core. Palstar uses the sort of two cores side by side, sort of a binocular type of configuration, if you want to call it that. And he said the toroidal core is a better design, works better, and for some reason, I don't know the answer because I didn't go into the discussion with him. He recommends this particular ballon to be used, maybe because he wants to sell it. But it's made by Ballon Designs, which you can buy from Ballon Designs. So that's the story with that. That's as far as I got with that discussion. Nick, back to you.
Hey, Andy, I got to ask you a quick question about that antenna in 2MB.
Let me get the beep. Stand by. I wish I had the time to sit down and talk with this guy to find out more about the antenna. Unfortunately, well, actually, fortunately for me, because I had my own table, I couldn't stay there long. It was a quick in and out thing. I was actually going to the bathroom when I passed him. Just by coincidence, I was not really looking to buy anything or to sell anything or to even look around because I didn't have the time. So any discussion regarding the antenna, I did not ask him. I did not have the time to do it, Barry, just to let you know.
Okay, you know, I've always questioned the fact that Richie cut about 75 feet of that twin lead away, and I don't know what that does, but I've had a suspicion that it ain't, you can't do that. That was my question.
Hold on. Well, we have a carrier, but I can get over it. I did not ask him the question. Under the circumstance, it did not come to mind to get into that discussion to mention to him that the feed line was cut down. So I did not get a chance to even... I thought about it later on. I said, well, I wish I had time to talk to this guy, but I just didn't have the time.
Okay, I'll stay back in the woodwork. Thank you, sir. I just thought it would be a good idea to bring that up. I've always been suspicious of that. You know that. Okay, and 2MB standing by. Go ahead, sir.
Yeah, you couldn't be suspicious of that one, Barry, because... A 200 ohm transmission line that already is multiple wavelengths long. I guess there are a couple of frequencies at the ends of bands or whatever where the Cobra antenna presents a particular high standing wave ratio. In that particular case, a particular length of line works a little better. That's the only guess I can think of. Either that or where the high current point falls on the balancing device. Back to you, Andy, for... Were there lots of people there? You had rain on the way up. Hopefully you had good weather while you were there. I think you were there 1.5 days. And did you sell anything? Did you buy anything? The major CDO at Nearfest, KQRIW. What town are they in now?
Okay. Let me wait to CDL and I have to go after this. No, did not buy anything. Did not sell anything. Was not really looking for anything. I was only looking to set up my table, which was in an indoor location, and perform the same testing that I do, that I will be doing at Mymark, which is coming up in 2 weeks. Mymark Flea Market, yeah, the 28th of this month, indoors at Levittown Hall, for an advertisement, if you want to come down to that. So I'll be there, or at least expecting to be there. So, good crowd. The weather was... not the greatest, but not that bad, meaning that there was no real downpours, but it was cloudy most of the time, and of course a lot cooler. When I left, the temperature was 46 degrees, and that was 2 o'clock yesterday. When I got here, back to Long Island, it was 58 degrees, and that's how much of a difference in temperature there is from there to here. temperature was going up as I was heading further south. Always a good crowd there. It's a big fest. And, even though the weather wasn't the greatest, and of course they have it on, it starts on Friday and ends Saturday afternoon. So it's basically 1.5 days. Just to mention, without actually pointing fingers at Richie, I'm not going to blame him, but I know there's, sometimes you have to, you know, watch what's going on. Just to mention that Richie mentioned to me, and I saw it, is that when his antenna tuner was damaged the second time, and this time, you know, that circuit board really was on fire. I mean, literally, there were pieces of it all over the
place. Repeater, time out.
All right, let me get the BWA to CEO.
Check it.
I'll give it to the station. I'll give it to you, Dick. You can pick up the station. Yeah, Richie, unfortunately, for some reason, Richie told me that one leg of his 450 ohm ladder line was disconnected from the ballon while he was running the amplifier, which might have caused this second problem in the first place. It does make sense. Somehow the wire came off, and when I went there, it was off. It was disconnected. I don't know how it got that way, but it was disconnected. So, just to mention, that probably caused the second problem to occur in the antenna tuner. All right, back to you, Dick.
That's how I can do it. One leg disconnected can give you a ridiculously high impedance at the ballon. The person who just checked in, please give us your full call letters after the beeps. Full call letters and name. Go right ahead, sir. K2RIW.
This is KC2 Queen Yankee Whiskey. KC2 Queen Yankee Whiskey. Joe in the mobile, just checking into the Duckman net. And I guess you could put me last on the list. And back to you, Dick.
Very fine, Joe. Joe, are you going to be within range for a while if we don't get to you for another 10 minutes? Is that okay? Or do you think you're going to be walking out of range of this repeater? Over to you, Joe.
Roger, roger, roger. No, I'll be in range. Yeah, you guys got a really powerful repeater there. Yeah, we'll be good. I'll be good. Back to you, Dick. Thank you, thank you.
Andy, did you have a sign on your setup up there at Nearfest telling people by the sign that they were getting a free checkout of their equipment? I'm guessing you do have a sign like that that you've used at Landmark over the years. Is that true? Go ahead.
Yes, I do. Yeah, without a sign, they wouldn't know what I'm doing there. And a lot of people just pass by anyway because, you know, when people go from one booth to another, one location, they don't want to stop. They just want to keep on walking. So, yeah, I had one of these moving signs. All right, I have to go because I got to get to bed early tonight. Got to get up really early tomorrow. And that's the story up to this point. Again, moving forward this week, and now that I'm going to have some time at night, I will make a test, an A-B comparison with my radio, and I want to see what this ballot is doing, the new one compared to the old one, before I give it back to Richie. Because, you know, once I give it back to him, then I won't be able to make the test, so that's why I'm holding on to it right now, just for that reason.
How many days this week are you going to be working, Andy?
Well, I was told every day, 5 days. Subject to change, but we'll see.
Okay, that'll keep you off the street tonight, as they say. Alrighty, I'm going to go on to the next person, which was Rich. And Rich says he thinks he's got a simple question. Very few questions are really simple. WB2GXM, K2RIW. Go ahead, Rich.
Dick.
Epic
as onward, Rich. Can I get
him from Farmer? Yes, you can. For right now. Go right ahead, Rich, GXM.
Thank you, Dick. K2RW in the group, WB2GXM, Rich. I am still wanting to experiment with putting antennas inside my attic. I have an attic which is 30 to 40 feet up in the air, and its length is 65 feet. It can accommodate almost a full-length 40-meter dipole. And I have power lines, Romex, up in the very, very apex of the attic. Otherwise, the attic is unshielded. There's no aluminum insulation. The shingles are non-metallic. I mention all this because I'm not too concerned with propagation or noise or whatever. I'll experiment with that. I am concerned with lightning. In your opinion, Dick, do you think that I need to worry about putting lightning arresters on an attic located inside, on an antenna located inside the attic, and probably below the apex, which has power lines in it? WB2GXM.
As I see it, Rich, your house has not had lightning arresters up till now, other than that Romex that's up at the apex. You seem to have the impression, by the way you're asking the question, you believe that the lightning has some kind of intelligence, that it's going to have X-ray vision. It's going to look through the roof of your house and say, hey, under the apex of that roof there's a amateur radio antenna. That's one of those things I like striking, so I'm going to go hit that house. Very, very unlikely. So whatever lightning protection you needed before you put in the antenna, the ham radio antenna, versus after the ham radio antenna, as I see it, the lightning protection requirement has not changed. Now, whether or not you want your house to have lightning protection is another whole thing to consider. The Romex up at the apex, that's an interesting place to put it. That's not where it is in my house. It goes between the holes and the rafters. Let me drop. I said rafters. I should have said joists. The floor joists have holes, and that's where the wiring for my house goes. Assuming that the Romex back at the fuse panel is well grounded, it is a kind of a poor man's lightning arrester, as I see it. On top of that, the chances of lightning striking your house is really one in a million type thing. I guarantee there are other buildings, other houses, trees, and whatever, that are taller than your house, and they're much more attractive, particularly with the sap in the tree in the summertime when the lightning occurs. So, I, for instance, have 100 feet of tower. I'm sitting on 300 feet above sea level land. And other than all of the guy wires that go down to screw anchors that are acting as lightning arresters, I have no other lightning arresters in my system. And I've been here for 40 years, something like that, 1969, 40 some odd years, 48 years, I guess it is, 49 years going on. So that lightning did strike in my neighborhood. Struck the power line a block or two from my house. And so me and my neighbors suffered quite a few pieces of damage from the spike of voltage that went down the local power line and came into my house. So, by the way, let me drop. What's not well known is that there's quite a large number of ways of making an antenna physically compact, folding it, zigzagging it, helical winding, loading coils, and whatever. There's all kinds of ways of making an antenna physically shorter to squeeze into any size you want. Believe it or not, with some craftiness, you could put a 160-meter antenna in that attic of yours. And as long as you're using very low-loss materials, the antenna can have a very high percentage of efficiency. Now, the Romex wiring in your house, if it happens to be a resonant length, you could get some pretty funny effects. And the fact that its proximity is going to be quite close to your amateur radio antenna, when you're on ham radio, there's a high probability that some of the appliances in your house will pick up that signal in that Romex and distribute it to your radios and televisions and telephones and so on. And there's ways of getting around that, but there's a quite a good possibility that will happen. And later on, you may find a way of putting the antenna outside the house and making it stealthy so that it can't be seen. WB2GXM, K2RIW, good, Rich.
K2RIW, WB2GXM. Well, thank you, Dick. I really value your opinion. And as I said, it's all an experiment. I don't expect to pump a lot of high power up there. I'm going to have a healthy respect for lightning, as you know. And I might just be doing QRP up there and experimenting with that, and maybe the effects will be minimized that way. Anyway, onwards we go. WB2GXM, clear.
You may start off with a QRP to make sure you're not affecting other appliances. Almost every electromagnetic interference problem is solvable with filters, bypass capacitors, and shielding, and whatever. So, if at some later time you want to run high power into that attic antenna, know that with enough enthusiasm and diligence and the right technology, it can be done. Whatever piece of equipment is being offended, there's ways of shielding it and protecting it. And step by step, divide and conquer, you can do that. So even if you get interference, don't let that be a showstopper. Okay. We've got Joe with a question, but I'll go back to Rich first with his follow-up. N2EO with the follow-up. K2RIW, good, Rich.
Okay, Dick. What's his name? Dr. Dave, AG2CS, told me about on a website called, what are they called? Away Solutions. He said everything there is expensive, which it is, but I found a lightning arrestor there for open wire lines. I didn't read the whole thing. They did say it contains a gas discharge tube. It's about $119, something I can afford. It says though to ground it to the equipment. Says nothing about an earth ground.
Yeah, I can't think of the name of the company in Nevada right now that sells lightning arrestors. But to install a lightning arrestor without a good grounding system to it strikes me as relatively useless. Yeah, with the discharge device mounted on your antenna, you could control the arcing between the two wires. But that's not the one you're worried about. The high voltage of the lightning getting on the wires themselves and doing damage is what you really care about. In your situation, where your antenna is considerably lower than the peaks of those trees, and there's lots of trees on your property and lots of adjacent pieces of property, for you to spend $100 and some odd of your hard-earned money for a lightning arrestor, I think there's only one chance in a million you need it. And that lightning, that when it does strike you, 99% of the time it's going to be striking the power line somewhere down the street, because that power distribution system that's in your neighborhood is a huge network. If you're flying in a helicopter over your town and you had some kind of x-ray vision that could see wiring, 110-volt wiring, or the multi-kilovolt wiring, you would see a tremendous amount of wires going up and down every single street. That's a great big target. So lightning, when it strikes, I'll bet you 98% of the time it strikes power wiring before it directly strikes a house. Of course, there's exceptions. The house is the highest thing on the top of a hill, and all the wiring is coming up to that house. But that's a rare case. That's not your case. So I'm not sure you're going to be getting your money's worth with a lightning arrestor on your antenna. Surge protectors on your 110-volt wiring are a lot less expensive, and that's where 90-some-odd% of the time the lightning is going to strike. So there you get more bang for the money, as I see it, Rich. N2EO, what you heard is a bunch of opinions. K2RIW, the tech man.
Okay, Dick.
case against the wheel. The only reason I'm bringing it up, you and Andy suggested that there was a static charge